probing real for. So the decision to come out of the army was really made for you in a sense, wasn't it, on the available information?
Well, I probably could have said I didn't know where I'd be posted. And by that time, I didn't really, well, certainly didn't want to be in a service corps. I'd want to be in a fighting unit, because bear in mind, I'm only 23 now, you see, my real age. I didn't fancy another British regiment. Because serving with the Gurkhas, they're all volunteers, you see, and they love, it's an honour. It's an honour to be serving, you see, so it made soldiering so pleasant. And one got a great affection for them.
Mm. What was their reaction, or the reaction of your other officers, or the NCOs to the fact that you were leaving?
Well, they knew that all this was happening, and they were going back to India. Mm. See, the whole red had the choice, so they're going back to India. I could stay on temporarily, or go transfer to the British Army, or I thought, well, I've got to get on with something. And my father wrote to me and suggested about becoming a surveyor. He'd had a dispute with a girls' school about their trees, and the surveyor had been to see him, and he thought that might be a good thing. But when I came home on my Far East leave, I went to see one of the local surveyors, find out about the profession. And then when I was actually demobilised, I went to the local Royal Institution's secretary, and you got a gratuity when you left the army, so I used that to become articled, because in those days you used to pay to go to work, and became articled to a chartered surveyor in Bristol.
Right. So the actual demob process.
Yes.
I mean, they tried to persuade you to stay on, did they?
No. Because then, if I hadn't, my demob being, having put my age up a year, and having served quite a long time, my demob number was, I don't know, small or high, whatever. My decision time was early, before, you see, one knew. But if I had, like, my company second in command, who was younger than me and hadn't served long, he stayed on, and of course when he went to the British Army, he went with the regiment to the British Army. And then fought in Malaya and Borneo, lost an arm in Borneo, and ended up Brigadier Brigade of Gurkhas.
Yeah. So where were you actually demobbed?
I think I had to go up to London, I think.
What was that process like?
Oh, it was like a big hangar. You went in and you, they issued you with a sport. You could choose a suit or a sports coat and slacks, pork pie hat, and, you know, a pair of shoes. And that.
So quite a sort of downbeat sort of
thing. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then back to Bristol.
Yeah.
How easy, I mean, you told us that you went to surveyors and
became
articles. How easy was it to settle down again?
Well, I had got married.
Right.
And I had all the studying to do. So, I was really busy. I suppose it wasn't easy. In a way, I don't know. I've set my goal on passing the exam. Then I set my goal on becoming a partner in the firm.
Right. So, you sound quite sort of organised and
focused. Yes.
Did you get any difficulty sleeping when you first came back?
Oh, I don't remember that. I don't sleep very well now, but
no nightmares.
I used to, not so much now, I used to dream in Gakali. And having conversations. Yes, your dreams did some of the incidents and things like that.
Yeah. Is it particular violent incidents that you
don't remember? Well, odd situations. They wanted to see as far as I'm concerned, the real ones that I was involved in. They were, I don't know, they were imaginary, you know. shall I or shall I do this or that, and what about the...
So about decision taking.
Yes.
So you stayed in Bristol for the rest of your...
So I stayed in Bristol all my working life. And then, I don't know if you want this, but just a bit of background. My first wife, she died of emphysema in 1980. And then I married again and went up to Worcester. But I'd retired now. And then that wife died after a car accident. And I was up there, and my son suggested come back here. Well, I was getting old, and I don't want to flog up there to see what Dad was up to.
And you live alone now?
I live alone now. But the lady you saw there, she was my first wife's best friend. She's a widow, and I see her often then. She lives down in Oxted.
You mentioned the bomb, that you felt that was the only way.
Oh, yeah, I think most of Forces people finished off. They'd have fought on and on. There'd have been huge, thousands of casualties.
Did you fear, before they dropped the bomb, did you fear being sent on to
fight? Didn't fear it, but I won't say I was looking forward to it.
Because you'd almost think the Gurkhas might be the natural...
Oh, well, they would. They were. Each regiment had four battalions. Now, that's the second battalion. Our first and third battalions were in Burma. And I think the fourth was up on the northwest frontier.
Right, yeah. So there would have been a good chance had the war gone on.
Oh, I mean, they were good in the... Because they're excellent in the jungle. They've spent hours. And, of course, this is where they beat the communists in Malaysia. They stay up to their waist in water without moving for hours, waiting for some communist chaps to come along and pick up supplies or something. Yes.
So how easy did you find it? It sounds as though you mixed in very easily in any company you went in.
Well, yes, I think I did. Yeah. Well, I like them.
Mm. Why do you think that was? Were you at boarding school?
No.
No, you were always a day boy, yeah.
Mm. No, I mean, they're such nice... Well, I like people, as long as they're reasonable people. And when I was chartered lots of Chester, there you met all sorts. And we dealt with fires and storms and floods. You'd meet a general one day and a bus driver the next, and four chaps out of work the next day, and so forth. The army had helped me with that meeting, and
yes. And you were obviously on the reserve, I imagine, when you
came back. Well, I suppose I might have been, I don't know, because I was in the Indian Army, you see.
Of course.
I paid my income tax to India, and they paid me, and we got slightly more money than equivalent, a major in a British regiment. Mm. And I think I'm right, I got extra money for serving overseas from India when I was in Italy. Yes, we were well paid in the Indian Army.
Did you keep in touch with the UK by letter when you were...
Well, I wrote to my parents. Mm.
And did you get letters back?
Yes.
Fairly regularly?
Well, it depends where we were, yes. Yeah. They used to send me, because I was a great pipe smoker in those days, send me tobacco.
The first aid provision and the medical provision in the field,
yes.
How confident were you of that?
Well, I must say I didn't really know much about it, but you had your first aid kit. Every chap had a first aid kit. And we also had a company called some morphine, which you could inject to try and ease the pain.
Right. Were you taught to inject that?
No, I wasn't actually, but we had a sort of medical orderly, one of the chaps. On reflection, I think I should have been taught more of that side.
So if someone was injured, they would be picked up by the stretch bearers.
Yes, or help back, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd come and then we'd they'd wrap a thing around him, you know, try and stem the blood or something. And if he's in great pain, give him a morphine injection. And then put the flag up and carry him over the hill. Once you're over the hill, you go down a long, slippy slope, but you get to battalion headquarters where there'd be a jeep or something. Or the medical aid centre was there. Another thing I should mention is the monastery at Casino had a huge influence. It's hard to believe. But when we had moved on, and the war was about 50 miles north of Casino, I went to try and find the temporary grave of the officer whose company I took over. And as I was walking up this little slippy path that goes where the mules and the men went up, as soon as I saw the outline of the jagged remains of the monastery, I moved off undercover, out of sight. And I thought, well, why are you doing this? See, it had such an influence on everyone.
Because it was brooding above you, wasn't it?
It was, yes. You've seen photos and things, haven't you?
And I suppose that feel that they were looking down at you,
yes.
You couldn't see them, but they couldn't see you. It's quite alarming.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I've got a... But will you have lunch with me, will you?
That'd be very nice. We've just finished.
Yes, finished that. Now, what I was going to say is I have a video of Casino.
Oh, yes. So I have seen it.
Thank you very much.
What about the stress and noise, particularly in that 3 weeks where you were pinned down? I mean, how did you cope with the stress?
Well, you just live with it, really.
You coped with it, by the sound.
Yes, oh yes.
Mm. Some people didn't, though, I imagine. Did it get to some people?
I think probably it did, yes. Yes, it did.
Did you have any soldiers go bomb happy?
Not really, no. Mm.
Would you be able to identify someone who was really getting very stressed out?
I think one would, by their actions. Yes, I think so. Yeah.
And would there be anything you could do in that case?
I'd send them back.
And you did that sometimes, didn't you?
Yes, if the chap was sick, you know.
Did you have any cases that you saw or heard about of self-inflicted wounds?
I heard of one, that's all, but I didn't see any.
Because it's always one of those things that go around as rumour, don't they?
It's yes. Because with the Gurkhas, they're not gold-plated people, but you didn't get much of that sort of thing. Because their sort of motto is, it's better to die than be a coward.
Did you tend to get sort of welfare problems with them at all, about concerns about, you know, what was going on at home?
Not really. That would be dealt with by the viceroys. When we were at a casino, the Germans shot shells with pamphlets in about the Americans and the girls in England. It didn't mean anything to our chaps. And the other advantage was the Germans would know if there's an Indian division opposite. And an Indian division in the main, in Italy, one Gurkha battalion, one British battalion, and one Indian battalion. There were these pamphlets. And the other thing was that they'd get some of these renegade Indians, you know, who were pushing. They had this Free Indian Army or something in Free India. They had this Free India. And they'd get them to listen into our wireless traffic. And, of course, with the Indians, they would understand the Urdu that was talked. But they didn't know Gurkhali.
Yes.
Well, lots of the men didn't know Urdu. It was right to learn it, because if you wanted to speak to an Indian regiment, say, you know, alter your fire, do this or that, you could communicate with them. Of course, nowadays it's very different. I mean, a lot of the Gurkhas can speak English. They're taught to have special lessons. In fact, I believe you can't be promoted above corporal unless you do speak English, or a fair amount of English.
So, but in your day... The officers
learned Gurkhali, and the men just spoke the Gurkhali.
Yeah. Do you think there was any particular aspect of fighting or equipment or weapons that the Gurkhas particularly excelled at?
Good at close combat. I mean, they'd use the cookery. See, there's a picture there on that one.
Is that a weapon that you used as well? Thank you. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Is that a weapon that you used?
I carried one. I didn't actually have to use it.
Right. Were you taught how to use it?
Oh, no, it's no. Okay.
Could you just pull it? Right, so, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it must be a fearsome weapon. So you were
yes.
quite confident if your men went in.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes,
they come out
yes,
on top,
yes. Well, I mean, in the Falklands, just before the end, my regiment were involved in that. They took passed through, I think, a guard's division, ready to swoop down onto Port Stanley. And the Argentinians heard the Gurkhas were there, and they pushed off. They weren't going to wait.
Yes, they have a reputation there. Which all must make you very proud.
Oh, it is, yes. Oh, it does, yes. Yeah. Oh, it's a privilege and honour to serve with them.
Any other stories or characters or that you haven't even had the chance to mention, as it were? So many people, I suppose.
So many people, yes. They're, I mean, they're very good soldiers, but they're not, they'll do more or less what they're told, but they're not a bloodthirsty people. They're very humorous, and they love children. Mm. They play for hours with children.
Yes. Mm. They're not really aware.
And, I mean, if someone falls, you know, they laugh like a drain if someone falls over and things like that, you know.
Right, well, it's been a fascinating story.
Yes.
I'll say thank you very much indeed for that.
Pleasure.
Geoffrey Probyn, End of Reel 4.